I'm John Kroll. Once again, Indiana has become the center of the political universe. Many news organizations now are reporting that Indiana Governor Mike Pence will become presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump's running mate. Former Indiana Governor and U.S. Senator Evan Bayh has made a surprise return to become the likely Democratic candidate for Indiana's Senate seat, and all of this has set off a scramble in Indiana politics like we have not seen before. Today on No Limits, we'll talk about all of this with an all-star team of political journalists. Veteran political reporter Mary Beth Schneider, Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette State House reporter Nikki Kelly, and Jim Shell of Wish TV and Indiana Week in Review. To join the conversation, call us at 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, or find us on social media. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about Indiana's now topsy-turvy political scene. If you'd like to join the conversation, as I suspect many of you will, please give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, my guests are an all-star team of political journalists. We have with us in the studio Mary Beth Schneider, veteran political reporter. And joining us by phone is Jim Shella of Indiana Week in Review and Wish TV, and Nikki Kelly, who is State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Well, it's good to have you all with us. I'd ask what was happening, but that's kind of an open-ended. I know several news organizations now have reported that it is official that Indiana Governor Mike Pence is Donald Trump's running mate, and that it will be a Trump-Pence ticket this fall. Is that what everyone here is hearing as well?
Well, if I could, John, here's what we're hearing, is that Trump has decided that Pence is his choice, but we're also hearing that the call has not been made yet. So Mike Pence has been saying all week, nothing's been offered, nothing's been accepted. Apparently that hasn't changed, but we expect that it will very soon.
Well, and everyone has their own thing, but there were some tweets from some national folks that the call was officially made just before noon today. Like I said, those are tweets from national reporters, and I don't personally have that confirmed.
Well, and to be fair,
and there are others who are disputing that for what it's worth, Nikki. But it certainly appears that it's a done deal, but no official word.
Well, and it should be noted too that the Trump campaign sent out a press release or alert saying that the official announcement was going to come at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning in New York. Correct.
Yes, and I also think there was, the fact that Mark Lauder got on a plane to go to New York City really spoke volumes this morning. That's Pence's deputy campaign manager, and he said he was going on campaign business. Well, Indiana governor campaign business probably doesn't take you to New York City in person.
So I'd like to hear all three of your thoughts on how this happened, because, you know, when you look at it, you see a Republican presidential candidate whose credentials really are that he is the ultimate entrepreneur. He's a thrice married, very materialistic billionaire. And you've got a very conservative Christian Indiana governor that on the surface does not look like a likely pairing. What brought these two together?
I mean, I kind of think it's political, strategy, obviously. I think Donald Trump recognizes that he needed to do something to bring some of the more establishment conservative Republicans back into the fold. And I think he's hoping that Mike Pence will, be sort of the calm, steady part of the ticket compared to his more brash, loud tone.
I think that there were a couple things. I think he was perhaps leaning originally towards Chris Christie, who certainly has been carrying a lot of water for him, but there's real bad blood between Chris Christie and Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, because Christie prosecuted Kushner's father. And so the family apparently been arguing against him. In addition, Newt Gingrich is firebrand, which you would think Trump would like, but he could outshine Trump sometimes.
Well,
and he
sort of
also
like down
trashed
too.
Him a couple times,
yeah.
too, which probably didn't go over very well, because I think what Donald Trump really loves is loyalty. And then the Cruz endorsement by Pence here was so weak. It was really more an endorsement of Donald Trump. I think that put Pence on the map, and all the social conservatives in the party and a lot of people like Paul Ryan have really hoped for something more steady political choice, and Pence is it.
Jim, let me reframe the question a little bit for you here. Why would Pence want this? Because at you know, Nate Silver's projections, a lot of people give Trump maybe a 1 in 5 chance of winning in the fall.
Down to about 1 in 3 today.
Yeah. So what, you know, what are Pence's reasons for wanting this to happen?
Well, and let me first answer the first
okay.
question, if I could.
Sure.
Because I think money might be a factor. Mike Pence has very close ties to the Koch brothers, mm-hmm. and they've been on the sidelines
True.
Here, and this could get them activated. So, you know, it sounds crass, but it could be Mary Beth always liked to write, "Mother, money is the mother's milk of politics."
Yep.
And that's really what it's all about often. Now, why would Mike Pence want to do this? Well, first of all, I think we all know that he's had national ambitions for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
He's looked at running for president a couple of different times. He seemed to have more success in Washington than he has had here in Indianapolis. He's in a tough reelection struggle, and if let's say that he becomes the vice presidential nominee and he loses, he is suddenly a national figure regardless, and he will be in a position to become a Fox News commentator or a presidential candidate down the road, and I think it's a big career step for him. No matter what.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about Indiana's topsy-turvy political scene. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Yes, Mary Beth.
I agree with a lot of what Jim said, but I do think there's a real downside here for Mike Pence, too, in that his name will forever be linked with a guy who you do not know what he will say, who he will insult, what terrible thing is going to pop out of his mouth, and Mike Pence is going to have to own that. I think that's very risky, and that's actually one reason early on I wasn't so sure Pence would do this, because he's not exactly... he's fairly risk averse, which is a typical Indiana politician trait. But I also think that I don't think he had any interest in being governor. I think his attention always was in Washington, and being governor was a stepping stone to a higher platform in D.C.
Well, and to demonstrate that he had executive ability and all of
yeah.
that, rather than a desire to do the job itself. You know, with this, there are a couple of things that come out of it. One of them is, if in fact this does come to pass, and I think we all have alluded to the fact that there, with Donald Trump, nothing can be taken for granted, and that there's a lot of volatility. It's going to set off a scramble for a Republican gubernatorial candidate here in the state, like we have not seen before, either. Nikki, I'm going to start with you on that one. What are we likely to see?
Well, I think by noon tomorrow, we're going to have a really good indication, because that's the deadline for several of these apparently interested persons to withdraw from the ballot on other races. It would be, for instance, House Speaker Brian Bosma, Representative Todd Rokita, Representative Brooks, Eric Holcomb, obviously, Lieutenant Governor Holcomb. So we will get an idea who is going to take the leap and who isn't by seeing who files to withdraw.
Jim, who are you hearing is interested?
Well, first of all, the biggest news of the morning is that Mitch Daniels issued a statement.
Yeah.
And in that statement, he said, I thought most interestingly, that he had considered taking a look at a vacancy here, and that he had support of more than half the members of the state committee. Yet he said that he will not present himself as a candidate for governor and would not accept the nomination. That's a huge development. Both him confirming that he'd been considering this and felt that he could win, and the fact that he's now stepping away. So that now clears the way for all of these other people. And I think that and put Greg Ballard on the list too. But I think probably it comes down to Brian Bosma or Eric Holcomb.
Mary Beth, does this does Pence's departure at a relatively late date from the governor's race help or hurt Republicans?
Oh gosh, I have absolutely no idea at this point. I think because we don't know yet who the replacement will be, it doesn't help in one sense because you have to change campaigns, but you're getting so much free media that I don't think it really hurts either. I think it remains, and I do think it's going to be hard for John Gregg to not be running against Mike Pence. I think that's what John Gregg's biggest card was.
That was the premise of his
entire
campaign.
That's right. Yeah. And so I think it could be slightly, you might be able to still use some of that against the sitting lieutenant governor. But Holcomb hasn't been there that long, and he's well-liked in circles where Mike Pence wasn't. And so I think it's going to be hard for John Gregg now.
I think if Brian Bosma ended up being the nominee, much of the same strategy that John Gregg was going to use could be moved over to him, because as Speaker of the House, he could have blocked RFRA, he could have blocked abortion bills, but he didn't. And not only didn't he block them, but he voted for them and pushed for them. So some of those negatives would easily translate to Bosma as well.
Jim, your thoughts. Does this help or hurt Republicans?
Oh, I think you can find an awful lot of Republicans who think that their chances of winning the governor's race in November just got better, no matter who ends up being on the ballot there. The Gregg campaign will tell you that while we've only seen one published poll in this race that came out in May that showed Pence 40, Gregg 36, and the margin of error at plus or minus 4, so it was basically a toss-up. The Gregg polling has showed that Pence has remained where he was, no movement, and that Gregg has actually moved in front. And that's before we've even gotten to the hard-hitting TV ads. I think that you just start with the fact that it's a red state. Mike Pence is an incumbent Republican governor. The fact that he's even in a toss-up is a bad sign, and things were not going well.
Does the fact that he is on the ticket, though, help Republicans in statewide races? I'm going to stick with you on that one, Jim. The fact that he's on the national ticket, and we're obviously every news organization is going to be covering his campaign for the vice presidency, is that going to help Republicans or will it hurt them?
In Indiana, I think, there are a lot of factors here that we're going to have to figure out before we can say much definitively. Having Evan Bayh on the ballot is going to make a big difference for Democrats.
Yeah, we're going to get to that, too. We haven't even touched on that one yet.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I think part of the Evan Bayh calculation here, though, is that Donald Trump will be viewed as toxic and that it's going to create an atmosphere where he's got a better opportunity.
Nikki, I'd like your thoughts on that, too. Is the fact that we have a vice presidential candidate, is it going to help those? And we're Jim's already alluded to the Senate race, which we're going to talk about more in the next segment. Is that going to help overall, or will it hurt?
I don't think it'll hurt. I think it probably cancels out with the Evan Bayh stuff. One thing I'd be curious, one of the most fascinating parts of all this to me is that we're talking about a governor who, as Jim mentioned, is struggling to get reelected, and yet somehow that translates into a positive on a national ticket. And I find the dichotomy between the two very interesting.
from a state, too, that Republicans ought to be able to win with their eyes closed. And so it's not a typical pick in that sense, but it is a typical pick in that he's really well thought of among, this reassures a whole lot of social conservatives, religious right around the nation. I think it's more about them than about Indiana.
We are talking about Indiana's topsy-turvy political scene, all of the changes that have happened within just the past week and a half or so. My guests are Mary Beth Schneider, who's a veteran political reporter, Jim Shella of Indiana Week in Review, which is here on WFYI, and Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881 or send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about all of the upheaval in Indiana's political scene. Many news organizations now are reporting that Mike Pence will be Donald Trump's running mate on the Republican presidential-vice presidential ticket. And we are going to be talking about that. My guests are Mary Beth Schneider, veteran political reporter, Jim Shella of Indiana Week in Review, which is here on WFYI and WISH-TV, and Nikki Kelly, who is the State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. Well, we just touched on the other big bombshell for this week. I'm just going to ask at the beginning of all three of you, how many of you saw the return of Evan Bayh, particularly in this fashion? If so, I definitely would like investment advice from you. So I'll start with Nikki on that one. I mean, did you see that coming?
No, I did not. Monday morning, I think, was a big shock to many of us. And kudos to the Bayh camp. They have always been able to keep a good secret. And they continue to do that and kind of shock the world on that one a bit. So I did not know it was coming.
Probably ought to give a shout out to the, a former member of the State House Press Corps, Tom LoBianco, who's with CNN now, for breaking that story. I gather he managed to scoop a leak that they were trying to leak it someplace else. Jim, did you see that coming?
Well, no, and I think anybody who says they did is probably lying to you, especially because of the way that Evan Bayh left the Senate and everything he said about how dysfunctional the Senate was, and the comments he's made about how much he enjoyed being a chief executive, and he even said that he was done with public life, I believe, at one point. So if you just look at his public statements, everything that he said indicated that this would never happen. We'll say that he was here making some campaign appearances, no big splash campaign appearances, but he was here doing some work for Hillary Clinton in advance of the May primary. And it was clear that he did have designs on playing a role in a Clinton administration, a role of some kind. Don't think he would have been a running mate choice. And I do wonder, and I asked him about this yesterday, just how much Hillary Clinton influenced him to make this move, because he could help the Democrats win control of the Senate, and that will mean an awful lot to Hillary Clinton. And he didn't want to answer that question. I got to believe it was a big factor.
Mary Beth, did you have any inkling?
No. Ditto everything Jim and Nikki said. I suppose the one thing that made everyone always wonder what Evan Bayh might do in the future was the fact that he was hanging on to $10 million. But I didn't see this
that
coming.
That he couldn't spend for any other purpose. Yeah.
Well, he could have, and he didn't. I mean, he could
have
started
given it to other candidates,
and he hardly gave anything.
But he couldn't use it for his
personal use. But I didn't see this coming, no, and I don't think anyone else did either. And, yeah, kudos to Tom LoBianco.
Mary Beth, I'm going to stay with you. So let's talk about what it does to the political scene here. The fact that he has come back. Well, actually, before we get to that, Barron Hill's departure from the race. What do you think motivated that?
Evan Bayh and Hillary Clinton and the party establishment telling them they had to make a change, that they needed to help put Indiana in play, and more importantly, win back the U.S. Senate. If Hillary Clinton becomes president, they need 4 seats there, and Evan Bayh could be one of those. I've talked, though, to a couple of people who were close to Barron Hill. They're pretty bitter about this. They feel he got shoved out, that things were actually improving on that campaign and money was coming in. But obviously it wasn't coming in fast enough to reassure people higher up that he could win in November against Todd Young.
Well, and it's probably worth, for those of us who've been around for quite a while, not quite at this late date, but it's the second time for that Senate seat that that's happened. He got shoved aside, what, in 92 for Joe Hogshead,
bad luck,
who was close. Yeah, so he has bad luck when he goes after this seat. Jim, what does it do to the political scene here?
Oh, my. I mean, first of all, the reason...
Besides everything.
Reason Barron,
go ahead.
The reason Barron Hill got out, I believe, more so than Evan Bayh coming down the pike, is just the fact that he was in a position where he wasn't going to win. If you look at his second quarter fundraising numbers, I believe he raised $150,000, and he had $143,000 on hand. At that level, you're not going to get on TV. So, the handwriting was on the wall. He had to get out of there. And then the most important thing about Evan Bayh coming in is that he's got $9 million, and he's already sent out a fundraising solicitation. And the first thing that Todd Young did was send out a fundraising solicitation. The folks who sell TV ad time are the ones who just experienced Christmas in July.
Nikki, what do you think it does?
Well, obviously, it changes everything. I was speaking to a well-known Republican on the phone that the moment the buy stuff hit, like in my email and stuff, mm-hmm. and said, "Oh my God, Barron Hill's withdrawing, and Evan Bayh's running," and he just literally said, "Well, that's just perfect." I mean, it just changes everything. They're going to have to put in a lot of money into a race that they pretty much thought was solidly in their pocket.
I think Eric Bradner, former Evansville and State House file reporter here in Indiana, now at CNN, got a quote that was a little bit more graphic than that one.
Yes, on a
there was a lot of shock on that Young campaign.
Yeah. And, the knock, though, on Evan Bayh often has been that he doesn't have particularly long coattails. Will that change anything in other races? I mean, will he have any spillover effect? Nikki, I'm going to stay with you on that one.
I'm not really sure. So whether Evan Bayh will help John Gregg, for instance.
Or even any other. We've got the entire Indiana House of Representatives this year.
We're getting to a point where a lot of the voters, don't know Evan Bayh anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, he hasn't run a race since, 2004? He's going to have to reintroduce himself and try to get some new voters, too. I don't think he can just assume that everyone who, supported him before is just going to automatically be on his side.
Jim, what are your thoughts? Is this going to happen?
Well, I think they did a poll.
Yeah.
And Evan Bayh is notorious for measuring the public mood before he makes a move. Mm-hmm. And I'm told that his lead, first of all, his name ID, despite the fact that he hasn't been on the ballot since 2004, is still very high. And secondly, he's got a lead if the election were held today. That is big enough that folks who support him will not disclose what it is because they know it won't turn out that way. Todd Young went from major favorite to underdog in the blink of an eye.
Tough day.
Yeah. Mary Beth, for the Young campaign, and you can tell, so far they're – the shift in tone was almost schizophrenic from the sort of press releases and media events that the Young campaign doing about Todd Young's vision for America, and they were somewhat positioning him as a centrist, the second coming of Mitch Daniels, all of that sort of stuff.
Completely different campaign now.
About, you know, really trying to chop away at Evan Bayh. How difficult is that to do, though, in the middle of a campaign?
It's very difficult to do, but, you know, that's politics for you. That's actually one of the things that make us all love it, is that it can change in an instant. And as they always used to say, a week is a long time in politics. Well, that was a long day for the Trump, for the Young campaign. It was funny. One of the things I saw was all these tweets, including from Dan Coats, about somebody coming back into the state to run for the U.S. Senate, which is exactly what Dan Coats did. He left the Senate, went to another state, was involved with a lobbying law firm, and then comes back to Indiana to run for Senate. And then what? You're criticizing Evan Bayh for that? I think Jim and Nikki and I can all criticize for that, because we criticized in our stories. We wrote stories about the criticism of Coates for that, but I'm not sure the Coates people can criticize on that.
Yeah, politicians are renowned for many things, but self-awareness is not necessarily one of them. So, you know, in terms of this grant, and obviously this is part of a huge chessboard here. I mean, part of the reason Bayh came back is about regaining control of the U.S. Senate for Democrats. It's about getting the Supreme Court into play, all sorts of other things. If you are the Indiana Republican Party right now, and I'll start with Jim on this one, what do you do to deal with a couple of, you know, earthquakes of this magnitude? The fact that you have to find a new gubernatorial candidate, and the guy that you've never been able to beat has decided to climb back into the ring. How do you deal with that?
One of the things you do is you try to convince Mike Pence to give whoever the next candidate is the $7 million you're still holding on to. Because the people who are having the worst day today are Republican donors who can see that there's a gubernatorial candidate and a Senate candidate heading for their door right now. Easily financed fall for the Republicans with a gubernatorial candidate getting lots of money from the Republican Governors Association and lots of money in the bank already, and a Senate candidate with a huge fundraising lead has turned into a circumstance where you got two very needy candidates. And that would be my first concern.
Nikki.
Yes.
Sorry,
I was reading something.
Oh, that's okay. No, I mean, we're all kind of tracking what's going on here. So if you're the Republican Party, how do you sort of get back on even footing after a couple of bombshells like the ones we've seen?
Well, part of it is they just need to focus on their own candidate. I mean, it's been a stream of nothing but, you know, going after Bayh, which I think shows immediately
how panicked they are.
Yeah. So I think part of it is just, you know, getting past the immediate shock and remembering that you have to push your own candidate and not just attack the other one.
And the state party has been very Pence-centric, which is typical. Usually the state party does, when you have the sitting governor, they really that's their guy and their focus. They're going to have to shift their focus now to some of the state house races and congressional races and not worry anymore pretty much about Mike Pence. They need to hang on to the governor's office with a different candidate.
Mary Beth, I'm going to stay with you on this one. Do you think some of the timing, the fact that Mitch Daniels did take himself out this morning pretty emphatically, was also about the kind of money questions we have been talking about here? Well, I guess what I'm saying is, as long as he was a possibility, nobody was going to give any money to anybody else.
Well,
does that free up?
It does, but I think the money will be there for whoever it is. Daniels could have raised the money in a blink of an eye. Other people are going to have to work a little harder for it. But I think there'll be a lot of energy behind whomever gets in. And in fact, maybe some more energy than there was behind Mike Pence, because I think they might see that their chances are better with a new face than with Pence. It is going to be. I remember when they picked Dan Quayle, mm-hmm. and it was happened yeah. at the convention, and a total shock, and it was absolute chaos. You're not going to see either both in Indiana and nationally that kind of panic surrounding Mike Pence. He's well established. I think the state party and the state Republicans will adjust pretty quickly in a way that they didn't back in '88.
Nikki, with presuming we obviously we're going to have a new Republican candidate for governor,
mm-hmm.
how does that candidate deal with the whole issue of Mike Pence and his record and his tenure? Because in some ways, as everyone's pointed out, there's some baggage there. I mean, whole RFRA mess. Do you embrace him?
I mean, I guess it just depends who the person is. Obviously, we've talked about the liabilities that Brian Bosma would have. Obviously, if someone from the federal level came, they'd have a lot different. I mean, those kinds of issues wouldn't even come up. And for Eric Holcomb, he's so new into the position and still sort of a blank slate policy-wise that I don't even think you can tie those, you know, things from the Pence administration to him yet.
Jim, though, I mean, I guess the way I'm asking the question is, isn't someone going to ask, you know, what would your position have been on RFRA? What would your position
absolutely.
Have been?
Absolutely. And so I guess it depends on who the candidate is, because I expect that you will see some of these people who are looking to take that position trying to create distance between themselves and Mike Pence. The real problem they've got is they probably don't want to do that in a hurry, because your first audience is the 18 members of the state GOP committee who are going to make the selection. And those people were put in place by Mike Pence for the most part. So you first got to play to them, and then you got to play to the public. And I think you'll probably see a little bit of a circular route taken here by whoever becomes the candidate.
Jim, go ahead, Nikki.
It's interesting, if Jim's right and they sort of distance themselves, they would then be distancing themselves from the vice presidential candidate, which is, you know, a little bit ironic.
It is, although we've seen that dynamic to a degree with Trump. I mean, there are a fair number of Republican candidates who are not exact for offices across the country who aren't exactly embracing him and his brand, in part because of the volatility. You know, is this, I mean, is there some risk for, well, I guess I don't want to ask a leading question that way. I'm going to stay with Jim on this one. We have never, the strength of Donald Trump is that we have never seen a candidate like him before. The weakness of Donald Trump is that we have never seen a candidate like him before. How much does that scare Indiana Republicans?
Oh, I think a lot, because I think, you know, one of the most interesting things that I've run into this year was a story I did on voter registration in Hamilton County prior to the May primary, and it was up 40%, and it wasn't just young people coming in to register. There were large numbers of people in their 40s and 50s who had never voted before. And those are Trump voters. The Trump voters are people who haven't followed the process. They haven't belonged to the party. They're a wild card, much as he is. And you don't know if they're going to vote in down-ballot races, and you don't know how they're going to vote in down-ballot races. So if you're a Republican candidate, you probably have got to figure out how to make sure that those people think that you're worth voting for.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about all of the changes, the twists, and the turns in Indiana's political scene over the past couple of weeks. My guests are Mary Beth Schneider. She's a veteran political reporter. Jim Shella, who is on Indiana Week in Review here on WFYI and is also with WISH-TV. And Nikki Kelly, who is the State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about Indiana's sort of earthquake-prone political scene right now. My guests are veteran political reporter Mary Beth Schneider, Nikki Kelly, who is the State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, and Jim Shella of Indiana Week in Review, which is here on WFYI and WISH-TV. So we were talking about all of the changes, and I think we really need to focus a little bit of attention on the governor's race. We've talked about what Evan Bayh is going to do to that Senate race, which is throw it up in the air completely and change both the strategy for the Young campaign and probably have some national impact. In the governor's race, who is most likely, do you think, to emerge as the new Republican candidate for governor? Mary Beth.
I wish I knew the answer to that. The names that get most talked about are Eric Holcomb, Brian Bosma, Todd Rokita, Susan Brooks. Honestly, I don't really see Todd Rokita. There is some bad relations going back a ways with people on the State Central Committee and some of the legislative leaders because he pushed for redistricting commissions and things and some voting changes that they didn't want. Susan Brooks might have a little harder time getting outside of this area, the donut area support. And frankly, I think it's tough for a woman to break through sometimes. And this is a pretty conservative state in that regard. We have not had a woman as governor. We seem to like them as lieutenant governors. Eric Holcomb hasn't been there that long. And so would you take the guy who is just appointed lieutenant governor and put him in the governor's seat? Because LG normally would be the obvious go-to. There doesn't seem to be, except for until Mitch Daniels took him out, there was no one person that you could say, aha, that's the obvious person. I think Brian Bosma, I didn't want to leave him off there. He has a whole lot going for him, except he, as Nikki, I think, pointed out, he has some of the same baggage going forward on RFRA that Mike Pence had, except it never seemed to stick to him as badly as it did to Mike Pence, maybe because he didn't go on George Stephanopoulos' show and say, George, George, over and over. But they're going to have to, I know they'll solve this. I think this is going to take like a week. Do you guys think? And it's going to take not any time at all. No calls have been probably being made for the past 2 weeks, and they're probably in intense call mode right now.
Nikki, the thing that Mary Beth just alluded to here, that Brian Bosma, and you made the point originally, that Brian Bosma carries some of the same baggage that Mike Pence did. How heavily do you think that will weigh in his calculation? He's not exactly made it a secret that he'd like to run for governor at some point in determining whether this is his moment or whether he should wait 4 years.
I mean, this is his best opportunity because, you know, if Lieutenant Governor Holcomb would do it, for instance, then, you know, then you're talking maybe 8 years down the road. So it's definitely his opportunity. I'm hearing mostly the committee members I've talked to are very intrigued by Susan Brooks, but they think logistically and practically that Governor Holcomb might be a better choice.
Having Lieutenant Governor Holcomb. What are you hearing, Jim?
Well, I think it's probably pretty wide open at this point. One of the things I'm hearing, Congressman Luke Messer, who says he's not interested in the post, is publicly saying that one thing they need to do is make sure that this is transparent, that it's not a backroom deal. Considering that, everybody who's going to make this decision is going to be staying in the same hotel in Cleveland all week next week. If you don't think there's going to be some deals made in some dark rooms there, I got some swampland for you. This is going to be something else. And I think trying to predict how it's going to end up is as Evan Bayh would say, a fool's errand.
Or as Donald Trump would say, who the hell knows?
Yeah.
I think that's right.
So, Jim, I'm going to stay with you for a second. If you're John Gregg, the Democratic candidate for governor, What do you do right now?
Well, you talk about John Gregg, and you talk about what John Gregg can do. I mean, one of the real challenges that John Gregg has had in this election is telling people what he offers other than "I'm not Mike Pence." And he's now got a great opportunity. He's going to have a couple of weeks, in all likelihood, to let people know who and what he is when he is temporarily unopposed. I think if you're John Gregg, you take that as the first opportunity here, as well as try to get some fundraising in here. You call the Democratic Governors Association and say, "Hey, move me up on the list." This is a real opportunity.
Nikki, same question to you. If you're John Gregg.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a rough. I mean, this is a rough time because he doesn't know who he's running against, so you don't know where to pivot. I imagine they have an ad strategy and a whole campaign strategy, you know, developed around Governor Pence. In the meantime, you know, he had an announcement earlier this week on infrastructure that was largely ignored due to the vice presidential information as well as the Evan Bayh announcement. So I kind of think he just needs to tread water for a little bit, let it settle down, and then try to reestablish.
Mary Beth, perhaps the only thing that Donald Trump and Evan Bayh have in common is they both do tend to suck all of the oxygen out of the room, which means that what Nikki's saying is true. John Gregg could pretty much set his hair on fire and no one would pay attention right now.
Or his mustache on
his
fire.
His mustache, yeah.
You know what campaigns usually do? And probably all those of us who watch them never believe it, but they always declare, you know, this wonderful, you know, that things will go on exactly the same. Well, they can't go on exactly the same. And, yeah, there must be. I think Jim's right. You know, these anti-Pence commercials that they already had, you know, filmed and ready to go, useless. Now, you might be able to use them to remind people of that we need a change in direction, but you're going to get a change in direction. It's going to be somebody new, and it won't even be somebody that closely tied to Mike Pence. None of these are his right-hand man, not even Eric Holcomb, because he's new to this seat. This is perhaps why you should ever decide how your campaign's going to be too far out.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about all of the changes in Indiana politics over the past couple of weeks. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So out of all of this, all of these changes, let's talk about who the big winners and the big losers are. Mary Beth, I'm going to start with you. Biggest winner over the past couple of weeks.
Oh, golly. Biggest winner. You know, it's easier to come up with biggest losers.
Okay. Well, if you want, we'll start there and give you a little bit of time.
Case on Mike Pence for being both the biggest winner and the biggest loser. I mean, I'll go with biggest winner with him. First, he's able to shed all the Indiana baggage that was hanging him down, and now he's national Mike Pence, the guy who's loved by all the national social circles out there, although not everybody, because I saw a tweet here from Ann Coulter, who's all upset, please, not Mike Pence. But for the most part, he's getting a pretty good reception. But he's also a big loser in the sense that he's got to really hope that Donald Trump can get his act together and win. Otherwise, you're part of the Titanic and the guy who maybe causes losses for the GOP all around the nation. Todd Young, definitely the week's big loser, I think, because he went from being the favorite to the underdog.
Yeah, all but
measuring. I wouldn't write him off. He's a good candidate. Yeah. He's a good campaigner. But, boy, you know, big, big difference now in who you're running against. And then some other big winners are these people like Brian Bosma and Eric Holcomb who, like, oh, I want to be governor in another 4 years. Well, no, now you get it maybe this week.
Get a shot.
Yeah.
Nikki, same question to you. Big winner, big loser.
Well, I mean, I think obviously Governor Pence is. especially if, as everything points to, he's the guy. If he stayed running for governor and lost, obviously that would have been kind of the end of his career, even if, you know, they lose down the line later in the election, which we have a long way to go. You know, it's not really him. It would be a Donald Trump loss, not a Mike Pence loss, really. Todd Young is hard to deal with, but I think John Gregg, I'm going to go with loser of the week, not because he's done anything. He's just finding himself in this really awkward position of seeing, you know, his race completely change before his eyes.
Jim, same question to you.
Yeah, I clearly, Mike Pence got what he wanted this week, which is an opportunity to be on the national stage and seek national office. And as Mary Beth said, he's running away from an awful lot of trouble here. That's an easy one. The big loser has to be Todd Young. As I said earlier, you know, from apparent easy winner to underdog. In the blink of an eye, that's a bad Monday.
And I want to put this. They always say the cliche about journalism is that it's history's first draft. You know, we've had a lot of upheaval, you know, changes in the rosters and all of that on both sides of the aisle. I want to talk a little bit about whether there's likely to be lasting significance, whether this is going to be like there were certain races when Evan Bayh ran for governor in 1988. He did set the state on a course and revitalized Democratic Party hopes for at least 10 to 15 years. When Mitch Daniels ran for governor, that obviously changed the course of Indiana government politics. Is this looking like it will be one of those kinds of elections, or will ultimately all of this drama amount to little more than temporary entertainment? Nikki, I'm going to start with you on that one.
You know, I think there's a little bit too much up in the air for me to say definitively, because I think without knowing who's going to run for governor, that's a little too hard to say sort of what sort of long-term, you know, result is going to come from it. But I will say it's been one of the most entertaining weeks or 2 weeks that Indiana has ever seen, and probably is going to continue for a couple more months.
Jim, same question to you.
Yeah, I think we got to figure out what the election results are before we can attach any historical significance. Go back to a tweet I saw from a friend of mine the other day that I think summed it all up. It was that House of Cards has nothing on Indiana politics this week.
Mary Beth.
I think it actually is one of those historic periods, not necessarily because of any kind of dynasty to come or major policy shift, but because it completely changes the face of the direction of Indiana politics. The players have really changed. This will either be continuation of a Bayh era or the end of a Bayh era if he loses. This could, you know, if the Democrats manage to get the governor's office, you know, despite everything, that's a huge shift. If Mike Pence somehow becomes vice president in a Trump administration, oh my gosh, yeah, the implications of that are humongous. And if he loses, you know, what does that do to his career going forward? I think it's going to be one of those times that you look back on and of where it was like we took all the players, shook them in a bag, and then see who managed to fall out.
Well, and admittedly, this is somewhat speculative, but if Brian Bosma does emerge as the Republican candidate
for governor,
then
you shake up in the Indiana House.
Yeah, that's the part. And we've only got a few minutes to talk about this. Nikki, I'm going to start with you. What does that do if Bosma becomes the gubernatorial nominee? Who emerges in the House?
Well, I think you'd probably be looking at Ways and Means Chair Tim Brown, or possibly Majority Leader Matt Lehman would probably be up on the list for possible House Speaker options. But that would be, yeah, yet another domino to fall in this category if it happens.
Jim, your thoughts?
And I guess I think Tim Brown is pretty comfortable as Ways and Means Chairman, and Matt Lehman is new to leadership. So it could also create a leadership fight with some folks from a few rows back trying to, you know, I always remember when John Gregg became the Democratic leader. He went. He was happy to say that he went from seat number 100 to seat number one. This could be an opening that could give somebody who is young and ambitious an opportunity that they wouldn't otherwise have. So,
and John Gregg, I think John Gregg started to become Speaker the very night while the votes were still being counted that defeated Mike Phillips, the current Speaker. And John set in motion everything immediately. And the minute that Brian Bosma, if he got picked to be on the ticket, you will see that happening. And I do think it'll be from a little bit further back than the normal front row.
Mary Beth, you know, in part because the caucus is so large, too. I mean, in some ways, the loyal opposition is within the caucus. There, which segment of the party do you think will emerge on top? Because that was one of Bosma's challenges, trying to hold the various wings of the party together.
Yeah, that's going to be very hard, whether it's one of the mainstream establishment people or one of the more conservative firebrands. I might pick a conservative firebrand right now because they lost some of the key players among that mainstream establishment in the last year or two.
Jim, in about 30 seconds, who do you think emerges, whether it, which wing of the party do you think emerges victorious in that?
Well, the growing wing of the House Republican caucus has been the conservative wing. And so, you know, the folks who were pushing for RFRA and gun control and unconstitutional abortion restrictions. So I think I'd look to that part of the room. I don't have a name. I don't know who it might be who would be the standard bearer for those folks, but I think they got some sway.
Nikki, I'm going to give you the last word on this. Who do you think, which wing do you think emerges?
Well, I was going with someone that had a little more experience in the caucus. I mean, I would even think, I don't know, someone who would be a fun speaker would be like Representative Tor or someone like that. But who knows? You know who else would be great? Jim Lucas. That would be one that I would see him trying to go after that.
Well, that'll give us a whole nother show, I think, if that comes to pass. I really would like to thank my guests, Mary Beth Schneider, Jim Shella, and Nikki Kelly, for helping us decipher all that has been going on in Indiana politics for the past week. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
This is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.